Hi, this is Mouse.
I'm Weens.
We have the Mouse and Weens podcast.
Mouse and Weens.
I'm a big sister in San Diego with kids, and I'm married.
And I have no friends. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do. I have friends. I just don't have any boyfriends or love. Anyway, Mouse and Weens podcast, you should listen to it.
Yeah,
it's not
really
depressing.
Fun. We talk about family stories, life and love, and kids, and all the things you're interested in. We promise.
Yay!
Celebrities in Hollywood, too.
Poke your little turtle head out and come listen to us.
Mouse and Weens. Bye.
Hey, this is Kate. I'm a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, and I collect stories. Everything from true crime to trauma to parenthood. There's a lot more in common between depression and sociopathy, or between serial killers and podcasters, than you might think. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at iwbpodcast.com and iwbpodcast on social media.
Austin.
Philip.
Ooh, wow.
That's right.
Amy Frost and I were talking, a week or two ago, and laughing about how you only knowing Paul Newman from something like Cars or Stanley Tucci, these kind of iconic actors, you only know them from these weird kind, I don't want to call them lesser movies, but they're not like the high points of their filmographies.
Well, because you don't always start at the high point. You just kind of...
I know. This isn't a judgment on you. This, we were just saying, like, this... When you say you only know Paul Newman from Cars or something like that, we were talking about how old it makes us feel. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, oh my God, you don't know Stanley Tucci from... all of the, you know, got a lifetime of that guy roles, but he's so elevated. Or Paul Newman, who's just this Hollywood icon, Cool Hand Luke and all these things. But I was thinking about an actor that you do have familiarity with, who's a big kind of comedy star that you have familiarity with for a recent role that I think is going to have a lot of staying power and last for a long time. And that's Eugene Levy. You know Eugene Levy because you know Dan Levy and you know Schitt's Creek.
That is, that's by association from his son, who was only famous from him. It's kind of funny.
I don't know that Dan Levy is only famous from him, but yes,
that's...
I agree. There's
when you have a leg up,
he had a foot in the door.
He's still very talented. It's a great show.
Absolutely. But I was just wondering, do you know Eugene Levy from any of his older roles, his older comedy roles?
I've never seen him in anything.
Wow, that's still amazing. And I'm glad you know him from something as quality as Schitt's Creek. But I just was wondering if you know him from, I mean, this guy's been in doing... he's been a known comedy player for 45, 50 years. You know what I mean?
It's so weird because the way he does comedy in Schitt's Creek is like this very like dry. It almost
That's
feels
Eugene
like,
Levy. Yeah.
It feels like he just started. It feels like
he's unsure of himself. Yeah. Yes. Very nerdy.
Right. His son was like, I've got this show. I guess you can play a role. And he was like too uncomfortable to say no. So he just took it. Like, that's what it feels like. It's
that's interesting because, I don't know. He was big in the '80s. He was always like a supporting player. And I'm trying to nail down like what the Eugene Levy movie that you should see is to see him when he was a little bit younger, to see him a little more in his kind of heyday. And I'm thinking there are things like Splash, where he plays like the scientist who's trying to prove there's a mermaid.
Okay, well then I have officially seen a Eugene Levy movie.
Have you
seen Splash? Yeah.
Have you seen any of like the Christopher Guest?
I've seen Splash. You know your wife, don't you?
Right. Yeah, the '80s movie queen. Yeah. But like any of the Christopher Guest stuff, like Best in Show, or
I guess I have seen. I've seen American Pie. He's in Cheaper by the Dozen, apparently, but I don't.
I don't know.
He's probably one of the billion kids. See, Father of the Bride.
Is he in Father of the Bride? Really? Weird.
Yeah. National Lampoon's Vacation.
He's in the very. He's in the opening scene of National Lampoon's Vacation as the used car salesman, and he is so hilarious in this one scene that he's in.
Oh, hey. Here's a reference to my childhood. He is in the 2006 animated movie Over the Hedge.
Okay.
I think he's the main character in that now that I...
No, the main characters I remember are Gary Shandling plays the turtle, and Bruce Willis plays the raccoon. Okay. But he's probably one of the other million animals in that movie. Yeah.
He's something in that.
Yeah. No, Eugene Levy's been around forever, and I just wondered if you had any other reference points besides Schitt's Creek, because he has this big career, and I think if you like him in Schitt's Creek, I think you would like a lot of the other stuff that he's done.
Yeah, he's been working for a while.
He's like a comedy legend, really. Like, he was on Second City TV in Canada. And just in every comedy, it felt like, in the 80s. So, when Dan Levy hosted SNL a couple months ago, there was this really, I don't know if I saw it on Instagram or something, this really sweet picture of Eugene Levy backstage, kind of in the wings of the stage, watching Dan Levy give his monologue. Just kind of being a dad.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of cheering for his son, and it's really sweet.
That is sweet.
But
how's For Your Consideration? Because that's a title I've heard.
I have no idea. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
what year?
It's 2006 or something.
I don't know. Dan Levy. Eugene Levy got sort of lost in a straight-to-video phase of his career at some point around there.
Yeah, we all kind of wind up there eventually.
No shade. Like, a lot of great actors go through, like, but he did, like, all these, like, straight-to-video American Pie sequels.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. There's, like,
yeah,
American Wedding and
like, a ton of them. And it's just sort of like, okay, he's working. And I think, you know, you gotta love that, like, Christopher Guest and, you know, he kept being brought into these good projects and kind of brought him back around again. And something like Schitt's Creek kind of just brought him to a whole new audience, like you. So,
yeah.
All right.
That's different generations have different...
different reference points.
That's right.
Yeah, sure.
Who's the actress for Jessie in Toy Story? Because she's another one. Oh, Joanne.
Joan Cusack.
Joan Cusack. Okay, yeah.
Her and John Cusack are siblings.
See, I don't even know John.
Yeah, you
like,
would.
You've talked to me about him before, but like I...
If you saw him, you'd go, oh, that guy, and you'd probably rattle off some obscure movie that he was... 2012.
The
movie,
yeah.
2012. Yeah, the movie I haven't seen, but you were a kid and you're like, this is awesome! And like, that's John Cusack. He's in that movie.
Yeah, okay. Joan Cusack. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Joan Cusack.
I always doubt myself. Yeah. I think I first saw her in A Series of Unfortunate Events. And so she's forever like...
Maybe, yeah.
She's forever that to me. She's also in Shameless as this germaphobe that doesn't leave her house. And
okay, yeah. Yeah, I have seen her on Shameless.
She's one of the best characters on there. So.
They're both, John and Joan Cusack, are both in 16 Candles way back in the day.
She's in School of Rock.
She's in School of Rock. She's the principal, yeah.
Yeah, she's the uptight principal that Jack Black kind of...
They're both in a movie that I'm probably going to eventually bring on here called Gross Point Blank, where John Cusack is a hitman and Joan Cusack is his secretary.
Interesting.
And he's a hitman who has to go to his high school reunion. It's a very dark comedy. It's very funny and very dark.
I could nitpick the name, but yeah. Okay.
Well, it takes place in Grosse Pointe, Michigan.
Oh, that makes a little more sense. Yeah.
It's a pun.
Then I like it. I'm on board, guys. Changing my mind.
Hello, and welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude. I'm the dad.
I'm Austin Rude. I'm the son. And we also may have George Rude, the grandson, wandering in and out of here.
Being a pain in the ass. If you hear some scratching, that's just him being George.
He adds a little ambiance to the show.
Yeah. What do they call it in Super 8, where the kid is talking, fake talking on the phone during the train station scene? It's like,
oh yeah, he's like being an
atmosphere
extra.
Yeah, it's bad. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Just home from work.
This is it's a Monday.
Monday. Yeah. Anyway, what have you been up to this week?
Not a whole lot. I'm still watching Good Girls. Mm-hmm. I've come to a revelation. It's kind of funny. So this show is really trying to be Breaking Bad. I'm on season 2 now, and like the plot points, like, come on. There's a male version of Skyler.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just the worst, most obnoxious. Like, he's he owns a car dealership and he's cheating on his wife and just like annoying all the time.
I do defend Skyler White more than most people do, but yeah, I get it. The buzzkill who doesn't want their spouse doing crime. Oh, God.
Come on, we're just here to watch people launder money. but yeah, I still like the characters, so I'm sticking with this show. It's nothing new. I feel like my revelation was that Breaking Bad did it better, but this show still does it good, and I like the characters.
Is it fair to say this is Breaking Bad for people that Breaking Bad was too intense for?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot less intense.
Because, I mean, that's just like the network TV line. Like,
I mean, it's even like you know exactly what's going to happen. I can guess every time because the way they set things up, just like...
Yeah.
You already know ahead of time.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
But it works. It's a nice show to watch.
That's good.
That's my week.
That's your week.
What about you?
Cool. Not bad. I honestly, have not watched very much this week. About a week ago, I did watch the original King Kong. I watched the 1933, King Kong because it's on HBO. It's kind of in preparation for this, and also because I haven't seen it in years, and I just wanted to kind of revisit it.
I've never seen the full length. I've seen, like, parts of it.
It is...
It's a 20s film, right?
1933.
Okay.
It is a good movie. It is a historically important movie. It's also, like, an insanely dated movie. Like, it's a little hard to watch and take seriously, but...
Boo, this CGI sucks.
It's not even that. Like, that's the impressive part of the movie is, like, yes, it looks silly and goofy, but for the time, you understand, like, oh, this is very cool, and you buy into it and all that. Yeah, just a lot of the acting is very... it's that very early sound movie kind of... like they were still acting for the stage, kind of, you know.
Oh yeah,
like
big
over, yeah, very big. But it's silly, it's goofy, it's fun, and I do recommend that people who have never seen it watch it, give it a shot. It's a really interesting kind of time capsule movie, and I think it's like a historically important movie, especially since we keep making King Kong movies. I think it's cool to look back and see where it all came from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see it as an important, like, just a marker of sort of like where we've been.
Yeah.
That's I'm always quick to say like that doesn't make a movie good just because it's historically relevant. Yeah. Or culturally relevant. Like there can be a movie like 12 Years a Slave that's like really impactful and has a message, but like just isn't executed well, and that doesn't mean that the message is bad, but it could still be a bad movie.
I've never seen it. This week, we watched the 2017 adventure monster movie Kong Skull Island, in which a team of scientists and soldiers venture into territory of Kong and must fight to escape with their lives. This movie stars Samuel L. Jackson, Tom Hiddleston, Brie Larson, John Goodman, John C. Reilly, Shea Whigham, Mark Evan Jackson, and Toby Kebbell as both Chaplin and Kong. This movie was directed by Jordan Vogt Roberts and written by Dan Gilroy, Max Borenstein, and Derek Connolly.
I don't know how they had to blackmail as many people to be in this movie. Like there is a crazy cast in here.
It's a great cast. Richard Jenkins also in this movie at the very beginning. He plays the senator.
Right.
You know Richard Jenkins from Shape of Water. He's the gay next door neighbor. Also a trillion other things. Richard Jenkins.
A lot of small roles.
He's great, though. Like every time he's in something. Step Brothers. He's the dad in Step Brothers. I love Richard Jenkins. I think he's one of these like great character actors that we have right now. This was your first time seeing this movie.
It was. Not my first time seeing a King Kong movie, though. Which leaves an interesting... Well, this is one of those things. I didn't want to watch this movie. Not like... not
well, thanks.
Not when you showed it. When...
Just in general, like when, you weren't
when
interested.
Studios, yeah. When this was coming out, it was like trailers all over the place. I was like, okay, they're gonna tie it into Godzilla somehow. But I was just like, I've seen two King Kong movies, like, and what is it, Peter Jackson's? His is like a very similar remake of the original. Plot-wise, it's very similar.
Plot-wise, it's nearly exact. He just did what Peter Jackson does and beefed it up, like, right, put in a bunch of extra characters.
He made it an epic, pretty much.
Took some of the racist elements out, and, not that the original King Kong is horrible, but there's a very stereotypical, like, Chinese cook on the ship.
Right.
And he replaced that with, like, an Andy Serkis character. Do we want to talk about the... Do we want to just talk about the elephant or the giant gorilla in the room and talk about Peter Jackson, King Kong, for a minute?
Yeah, we can. Because all I wanted to say was just that, like, that movie I've seen so many times that I have this impression, like, there's a certain way you have to do Godzilla. Like, I was like, I just don't want to watch someone
Godzilla
else's...
or King Kong.
King Kong, sorry.
Yeah. And Godzilla, maybe.
I just don't want to watch another remake of the exact same story. But this movie showed me you can do it very differently.
It is different, but the broad strokes are the same.
Yeah, they keep a lot of elements.
Expedition to Skull Island. It's not going for... this one is sort of a hybrid between... the original King Kong and the 1970s King Kong. Because I think the 70s one was about an oil company going to scout out Skull Island to drill for oil there.
I think it
had something to do with that. I don't remember. The 70s one is terrible. I don't care what anyone says.
As all 70s ones are.
It's really bad. Great cast in it. Honest to God. Like, Jeff Bridges, Jessica Lange, Charles Grodin. It's a really great cast.
Hey, I know Jessica Lange.
American Horror Story.
That's right.
That's right, yeah.
A lot of young people know her.
Yeah. She's another one who's had a career resurgence, kind of, and become relevant to a new generation. But, yeah, that King Kong is really bad. I think I think this one sort of takes the first half of, like, the Peter Jackson or the original King Kong story. Takes the Skull Island part of it and just says, what if we never leave here? What if we don't go to New York? What if we don't have the iconic Empire State Building and we just make this a post-Vietnam jungle story? And I kind of dig that. I like that.
Right.
To me, that's the best part of King Kong anyway. The New York part is, I get it. It's kind of the point of the story being that, you know, you can't control nature. You can't put, you know, man exploiting nature, this kind of thing. But this one, they took it and they made it a Moby Dick story. They made it about taking revenge on nature, which is, I don't want to say more interesting, but it's a different angle for the same story. And they kept it all in this exotic place full of monsters. And I really like that.
That's what I wanted to talk about, because this movie takes King Kong and just inserts, like, the standard Godzilla, and this isn't a criticism, the standard Godzilla, like, kind of ethical questions and, like, the themes that they cover of, like, humanity not being top dog and, how we react to that. And that's basically what they did with this. They changed the story so much, like, I think it is a different story, because, like, the whole reason that they didn't have the New York scenes in this was because, like, there was no romantic aspect here. Like, there was no
right
romance between King Kong and a human.
Yeah, that's true.
They had elements of it, almost like, what's it called, like, homage to it.
Kind of. Like, there's a lot of homage in this movie. Like,
right.
This
they don't dedicate time in the movie properly to exploring that.
Right.
Which I think is good, because
I think so as well. Because that, I don't know that I want to label it as racist or problematic, but it, the idea of, like, savage native people, oh my God, look at this exotic blonde woman. We've never seen something like, in this primal sort of weird mixing of culture and the, you know, the idea of, like, taking a woman, and because that's a savage thing that happens on this island. Like, all of that stuff doesn't need to be in this movie. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And especially if you're not going to cap it off with the New York thing, where he goes crazy and the entire reason, like that is a problem with the original movie, is like the entire reason he goes crazy is because he's looking for this woman that he is in love with. Not because he's a piece of nature being caged and put on display. Mm-hmm. And he freaks out over that. It's just,
Yeah, that kind of distracts. I never thought about that.
It distracts, like, from a bigger theme, yeah, that I feel like it's almost like we want to make this point about this, but we're not committing to it. I'm talking about the original King Kong. Mm-hmm. This movie, Kong Skull Island,
it doesn't even attempt to make that point.
It sort of, like, brings up points and then lets them go. I would say the biggest point that it commits to is the Captain Ahab story that Samuel L. Jackson's character is on. This obsessed with revenge against nature kind of thing. And I like that. Right. I like that that's the one it gloms onto.
Yeah. There's that. There's also, like, the weird Lost in Time guy.
Oh, yeah.
On the island.
John C. Reilly is the World War II pilot.
They dedicated a surprising amount of time to that. I just kind of thought, oh, this is a goofy little side thing. And then it kind of turned out to be, like, the end of the movie. Like, they capped it off with, this is our happy ending.
That was weird. That was really weird. And I'll also say the beginning of this movie is also weird because, like, seeing him and the Japanese pilot crash on the island, like, we don't need that. Because
I loved that, though.
I don't hate it. I'm just saying, when they meet up with him again, he explains it all to them. And it's like, why do we have a flashback and an exposition dump for the same thing? And then there's 20 minutes of talking to senators, of gathering the team, of this, that, and the other, where it's like, all that could have been done on the boat. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't need this much lead. There's a half hour before they even take off on the boat that I feel like, yeah, we don't need all this.
Yeah, I think that's just left over from Peter Jackson. They were just like, this thing has to have an enormous screen time. So.
It kind of does feel like they were trying to hit the 2 hour mark, but they really didn't need to. This movie could have been in and out in hour and a half, I think.
I liked how they introduced Skull Island, though. I was like that was so cool to see, like the big hand. Like I kind of didn't know what was going on. I'm like, why are we having a samurai fight in?
Oh, that
on the island,
very beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, this movie goes more into like the lore of
Kong.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that explained further in, like, books and stuff? Or is this movie just, like, making that up? Because that's something I don't know.
I don't know. It does seem like in all the other Kong movies, like, he is sort of king of the jungle. Kind of, like, he does fight dinosaurs. He does do all this other stuff. But it doesn't feel like he's the protector of the native people. In those other movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's where it comes to them, like, sacrificing women to him. And I don't know if this movie got to a point where they looked at that and they said, you know what, that's a product of its time to portray indigenous people that way. We're not going to do that. And we're going to shift the mythology to where he's more like Godzilla, and he's kind of a protector. He's destructive, and he's a blunt instrument, but overall, he's not somebody the natives are afraid of and make human sacrifices to.
I thought he was always the protector, though.
I don't know that he always was. I always feel like the older movies portrayed him as this thing in the jungle that came up to the wall, and if they didn't have a woman at the top of the wall for him to take, then, you know, he would raise hell on the people right there. And in the original Kong, the 33 that I just watched, he does, like, go crazy on the natives. Like, he kills a shitload of the native people. Like, it's honestly, it's very brutal for a 1930s movie.
I'm sure.
I wonder if they shifted that mythology just because they didn't want to portray the native people as sort of barbaric human sacrifice people. And you have a note in our show doc about native people. Do you want to talk about that?
I did want to talk because I noticed, and I think you're right, that it's very deliberate in how they kind of looked at, we're going to adapt this. And I don't know if it was a political correctness or if it was more about they wanted to change the meaning to match Godzilla. Because it, I'm going to keep bringing this up because it's something I want to cover later. But like, they are taking a lot from Godzilla here. They're kind of changing Kong into a titan like Godzilla.
Right.
For their own franchise purposes, but anyway,
there are writers on this movie who worked on Godzilla and Godzilla versus Kong. So there is, I think, an effort to kind of bring everything towards the center a little bit so that we're in the same universe.
Right, because I think I've seen three of these movies now, three out of four, and they all sort of deal with the same concepts of, like, humanity's place in the world.
Right.
Which I think is really interesting. But with the natives, I noticed there's a lot more respect paid to them in this movie. There's they're not shown as, like, antagonists, which I feel like the Peter Jackson movie kind of paints them as, like, not evil, but, like, against the main characters. Like, it paints them, like, they just have their own motives, but
sure.
It's still, there's this imagery of, like, the barbaric Native American or
Native
wherever. But right, yeah. But yeah. But it's based off of how we as colonizers saw the Native Americans. Like, Skull Island doesn't exist. This, what they're going off of, what, they are going off of this stereotype that doesn't even exist to create a new, like, Native culture. And so I feel like what they did here is they took this stereotype and then they were like, we're going to pay respect to Native people. Like,
sure.
'Cause it looks like they took actual, like, traditions from different African tribes or different Native
Pacific Island tribes.
Right. All of these, like, places that. Where people are still Native.
Right. I don't know that. I mean, there are do you remember a couple years ago when that he's like a Christian missionary and he wanted to go to this place where these Native people in the South Pacific, like, had not ever seen the modern world, had not had any contact with anything off of their island ever, mm-hmm. and was trying to go there, and they killed him. And people were like, we need to bring those people to justice. And it's like, no, like, they were like, I do think there are probably Native tribes that are protective of their land and of their people and don't want outsiders coming in. But I do feel like the old Kong Native people portrayal is so much more blunt than that. They're just sort of like the Peter Jackson one. I don't think it's terrible. They're portrayed as people sort of defending their own, but they also kidnap the white woman to sacrifice to the gorilla.
Right. They're still leaning into those tropes.
It's just very, like, broad strokes. And I love the Peter Jackson King Kong, and I know that's not necessarily a super popular opinion. I think it's a great Kong movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some problematic stuff. And you're right. They do portray these people in Skull Island as they have a society. They have he's explaining it to him. He's like, they don't speak, they don't smile,
but
they
but
don't own property though either. Mm-hmm.
And he even says he's grown accustomed to it. Like he's like, you understand what they mean after a while.
Right. They see him off. They kind of say goodbye in their own way. They're portrayed as almost like a monk like people,
mm-hmm.
that just sort of have this very quiet society, quiet non-violent society, and they worship Kong not because they're afraid of Kong, they don't sacrifice things to him, but because he protects them.
Right. They have sort of there's kind of two groups of people in this movie. There's humans that live in a world where they assume they are at the top and they are really struggling with the fact that they aren't when they meet King right. Kong. And then there's the Native people who have just accepted this fact. They live in a place where they are not the top of the food chain and they are okay with it. And they have become nurturers to the land and they're kind of, they're being protected by Kong and they're protecting Kong. And, I think that all ties into Godzilla because this is all a metaphor for nature, right?
Yeah.
That's how I see it as like...
Or man's relationship to Nate. Like,
Our relationship to the earth. nuclear disasters. And
we talk about Godzilla. There's a weird thing with Godzilla because Godzilla has become an American franchise. And Godzilla was originally a Japanese franchise that was born out of Japan having had a nuclear bomb dropped on them by America. So I feel like there's this very weird meta relationship with American studios making a major money-making franchise out of something that we became the warning. This was created as a look what you did to us kind of thing.
This movie starts with Japan as the bad guys.
As I don't know that it's the bad guys. Well,
with the World War One guy, like he's
The World War this movie, right. It is taking place in World War II, like right before the bomb is dropped, and yeah. There's a very strange relation, and I like the new Godzilla movies too, but I can never get that out of my head. There's like, should we be making Godzilla movies? Because this has been Japan's bag for a long time, and they're really good at it. And
it is strange.
But Kong and Godzilla, there was a movie with them in the 60s as well. Like there's a history of like weird crossovers with all of this stuff. But I forget where we started. Oh yeah. Yeah. the idea of man and nature, the weird relationship between them. Yeah, this is definitely a metaphor for that. And I think it's best characterized in this movie, like I said, with the Samuel L. Jackson character. Like, everybody else just wants to leave the island. He wants to stay behind and fight nature. Because
if he leaves the island, he's still second on the food chain. He hasn't gotten rid of Kong yet.
Yeah, I don't think...
You don't think it's that?
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that he's not the top of the food chain necessarily. I think it's that he lost men to it, or at least that's what he's saying. But also that he just sacrificed so much in Vietnam. And at the beginning of this movie is when they are pulling troops out of Vietnam.
Right.
So he is like, I just lost one war in the jungle. I'm not going to lose another one. It would be like...
He stopped those men from going home, too.
Yeah.
They were ready to go.
He wanted to go back and fight. Them. Yeah. And it was... he's sort of portrayed as like the quintessential warrior who... I live to fight, and I don't lose, and all this machismo, but it boils over in this movie to something ridiculous. Like, we got hit by a hurricane 3 years ago. It would be like, okay, I can't wait for another hurricane to come through here so I can kick its ass, like as revenge, you know? And it's just sort of like, it doesn't work that way. And trying to murder a giant gorilla is just as stupid as that. And I like that he doesn't get it, that he's too blinded by that. As silly as it is, I don't know. I like it. I like that part of this movie.
And I think Samuel L. Jackson sells it because I feel like he's the only character who was a character in this movie.
I agree.
Because the rest are just actors being famous actors, I feel like.
That's kind of it.
Brie Larson, I'm sorry, you are very clearly only trying to look hot in this movie. Like, the way she's holding the camera, right. And like, just, oh, my hair is just naturally flowing. I'm not gonna pull it out of my face. Like, I don't know, there's a certain level of bombacity with it.
Sure, like everything is shallow in this movie. The relationships that we're told that characters have between each other, we only know they have those relationships because they tell us. They just partner up at some point, and they're like, Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson start hanging out for no reason. They shouldn't.
That's
they don't have any chemistry. It just is like, oh, they're together now. And at the end, there's like a weird romantic moment with them. And it's just sort
of
like...
I honestly did not notice.
I didn't... I don't buy this at all because... But now it's here just because you're telling me it's here. Shea Whigham as the one guy. He's like half of a developed character. I kind of like what he's doing, but there's no development. They skip over all the development. And he just sort of hits these points where, like, I like the part where he's telling the story of, like, I took this rifle off a Vietnamese farmer who had never seen a gun before we showed up. And we make, and you make enemies out of these people. And it's like, wow, that's on track to be an interesting character development point and to make some sort of story about this. They follow up on none of it. They follow up on nothing. And it
was just a cool quote.
It just, yeah, he's going to sacrifice himself at the end. But you never get this sense that he is a person who would sacrifice himself, that he is in some dark hole, that he's scarred by Vietnam, anything. Like, they just sort of drop these characters in. They go, here's who these people are. Here's what their relationships to each other are. All right, now go. And that's it.
Do you know what I think that is? I think that's, like, the writer's writing something, and then the director's just kind of being like, yeah, okay, but we have a limited amount of screen time here.
Right.
And we're showing monsters.
We're showing monsters and helicopter porn. We're going to have 8 million slow motion shots of army helicopters, which do look cool. It all looks cool.
You can make your ethical points or whatever, but do it at this time.
I don't know. I feel like this is a bit of a lazily written movie from the human point of view. I feel like there's parts of it that are good and on track to be interesting, but at the end of the day, what I like about this movie is King Kong. I mean, it really is. Like, the director saying this needs to be about helicopters and monsters is not wrong. It's the best stuff in the movie. The mythology of this stuff, and, you know, the native people too. But I think a lot of the human characters are so lazily written. And I wonder if you made mention of this during the opening credits of this. You go, uh-oh, three writers. Because we've talked about how...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's been... We've talked about it on the show or just talked about it in general. Like, if you see a movie with, like, a ton of writers on it, it usually means, like...
it's a shit show.
They've meshed, like, five scripts together into one.
Yeah.
And I think that might be part of the case here, but I also think it might be part of... a result of making a movie and then having to have it fit into a franchise in some, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the idea of, oh, here it is. And then they hack it up because they're like, well, this can't happen because this has to happen once he meets up with God. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen Godzilla versus Kong yet, but I do know that a lot of, stuff in terms of franchises, it gets carved up and cut up because it has to fit in a certain area.
Right. Well, this is an incomplete movie, I think. I think this movie, and it kind of feels like it at parts, it's a stepping stone in a direction towards Kong versus Godzilla. Because, like,
do you feel like it's one of the MCU origin movies that just got done because they needed...
Yes, that is exactly what it is. And I think the reason we didn't see New York is because we're going to see Kong in New York as the sequel to this movie after... Wow.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a bunch of these, which is fine.
It is fine. I think that's an interesting point. I think you're probably... on the right track, at least, that They can't have him in New York because in the Kong mythology, he dies in New York. And we need
And then him. We can't make more movies.
Right. You can't capture a monster in New York alive. Like, yeah. Like the idea. So, like, it just has to be like, yeah, we're doing this all on Skull Island. Again, that's a plus for me. Skull Island's the best.
Right.
And it also gives like a, I think also what I like about it, I realized halfway through this, it gives this a Predator vibe, like the original Predator, like mm-hmm. ensemble cast, big, dumb, fun, monster in the jungle. That's what
I noticed that right away. I was like, oh, Vietnam. Okay. We're doing a Predator.
A little bit. Yeah. Predator's not Vietnam, but
it's not.
No.
Oh.
But they're probably Vietnam vets. I think that's implied. But, yeah.
Okay, then.
This is a movie. I wrote this down in several places. This movie knows what it is. And I think that's why it kind of hints at making bigger points. And then I feel like somebody's like, now, let's back off of this. This is just about monsters fighting. Like, this yeah. movie kind of, in some ways, it's better that it's not trying to make big, giant points or judgments about humanity. That they just are like, look, this is a big, dumb monster fight movie. Let's just have fun with that. And I think when they're doing that, it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a weird line, though, because...
There is.
There are movies that... This movie feels similar to Jurassic World.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, you know, they're both trying to make big monster movies that are just kind of casual, fun, but like there's a way to do it. And I don't know what the difference is, but there's a very clear difference there.
I think it's when, both of these are late franchise movies. There's a lot of winking involved, you know, a lot. At one point, Samuel L. Jackson says, hold on to your butts in this movie, which is his famous line from the first Jurassic Park movie. And it's like, did you really just say it? It is. I mean, you want to talk about something that takes you out of the movie.
Right.
I mean, it's silly. And all the rest of the homage stuff that they do in here, like there's so much stuff in here that is like trying to hearken to Apocalypse Now. It's Vietnam, it's helicopters, they're playing music. It's kind of a banger classic rock soundtrack, by the way.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
But a lot of that stuff is, it's there, but it's a little more subtle. But when he goes, hold on to your butts. I mean, it is like in Jurassic World, you know, they keep bringing stuff from the old movies in. It's a fan service movie. Mm-hmm. Both of these are kind of like late franchise revivals that don't trust themselves enough to engage with an audience. So they're having to pull in all this old stuff and wink at the audience too much.
It's a compilation of things that have been proven to work in the past.
It's a greatest hits movie.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. It's a remastered, yeah. like,
it's like,
let's shake it up. Okay.
Yeah, it's
shake
a
up the box
wet.
And send it out and they'll like it.
But
honestly, like, for as much as I am going to say this is a bit of an average movie, and I...
That's fair.
And Peter Jackson is boring, but I do think his Kong movie is better. But I like this movie because it showed me that there's more you can do with King Kong that I didn't realize before. And maybe other people didn't. Maybe people just... Because Kong has been done the same way over and over and over again.
Right, right.
And so this is a new way to tell the story.
There are, I will say, there's a slew of B-movies. There's like Son of Kong and Return of King Kong and King Kong Lives, where there's a giant robot King Kong. You know, like there's all of these old Kong B movies that did try to do other things. Mm-hmm. They don't always work.
Maybe we'll get Robot Kong versus Robot Godzilla.
There's a Robot
versus Pacific Rim.
Mecha Godzilla is a thing that exists in the Godzilla universe. So, yeah. I've not seen the new one. I am looking forward to it. I expect nothing but monsters punching monsters. And if that's what they deliver to me, I am fine with that. The kaijus, in some weird way, are kind of like the MCU to me. It's big, dumb, colorful, fun. And just on surface level, I can enjoy that. I don't want them to get too deep with world building and trying to make big points. But I also recognize this is not a, capital G, great movie. Like, this movie is fun. And I've seen it on cable half a dozen times. It'll come on, I'll watch a half hour of it.
The helicopter scene is probably like
it's great.
What I'm going to rewatch.
It's really a well done thing. And some of the fights, the fight with the squid and stuff like that.
I think the like ant thing that stabbed down from above, oh, yeah. That thing was probably the creepiest. I wanted more of that, actually.
More of the weird
I felt like there wasn't enough. I was like, there's a lot of set pieces, but I want more.
Yeah.
Or just like the feeling of danger on this island wasn't enough.
It does feel like there should have been more. Like the Peter Jackson, we're going to keep going back. Peter Jackson did a great job of Skull Island is a freaking dangerous place. Mm-hmm. Like dinosaurs. That scene where she's running from dinosaurs and Kong and they're all fighting for her. And then the spider
bug pit. Yeah.
That was actually a scene in the 33 King Kong that was cut. It was considered too intense for audiences at the time.
That's crazy. How did they even film that? Please tell me it's somewhere.
I think the footage is somewhere because I think that's what Peter Jackson based his sequence on when he put it back in.
Oh, okay.
Good. Yeah, it's all there to show you, like, Kong is dangerous and scary, but he's not the only dangerous and scary thing out here. And this movie touches on it, but outside of the big skull dinosaurs, we don't get that much of it. You're right.
I think it's because, like, in the Peter Jackson, they like, have objectives throughout the movie. They're like, okay, we're going here to do this.
It is kind of chapters.
And then something like interrupts and that's the danger. And so you feel like these threats are coming out of nowhere. And then like in this movie, they're like, we're going to go through this super dangerous area. And someone's going to be like, actually, that's a really dangerous area. And they're like, no, it's not. We're just going to go through it. And so it's like, of course you're going to get danger there.
Right.
But if you took this path through the meadows, then you're gonna be fine.
Right.
No one takes the meadow path on Skull Island.
It kind of is that. At a certain point, you feel like this is a movie about people who just make bad decisions. And you know what I mean? Like, and it's kind of like, just get yourself off the island. I don't know. I feel like that kind of covers it. There's not a lot of depth to this movie. This is another one like, what's the Ready or Not, when we watched Ready or Not last year.
And oh, yeah.
We're like, what a fun movie. And then we go to talk about it and we're like, there really isn't much on the bone here.
Yeah, I think this movie is probably great to see in theaters, though.
I think so as well.
A lot of visual. I mean, the walking camera character is basically just there to show us cool shots, which is completely valid, I think.
Yeah, there's some of the stuff like through the camera lens I wasn't a big fan of. The POV shots when Tom Hiddleston's running with the gas mask on and shooting things. And then they show like through the gas. And I'm like, just stop doing first person shooter shit. But when they would take like big wide shots of landscapes or Kong against the sunset with the helicopter, like the great shots, unbelievable cinematography in the wide shots. And I agree. I bet in a theater, this movie was even more fun than it is at home. But as it stands as a whole, I think if you're a fan of King Kong and kaiju movies, you'll have fun with this. If like you're not really into it, I think you'll be like, eh, this movie's okay. You know, like, right. I don't think this is a bad movie any metric, but
you'll
like,
get excitement and then boredom. Like,
but
like
you'll, I think you'll ultimately find this movie a little forgettable. I think it's fun, but I wouldn't push this movie on a lot of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would rather watch the Godzilla version of, you know, this
franchise. The newer version. Yeah. I think the first Godzilla movie is great.
Mm-hmm. I what I'm trying to say is, like, in terms of the franchise of this, like, I would rank this below the first Godzilla, but above the second.
I think that's about right. Yeah. And probably a distant second to the first Godzilla. Like, it's not right up there with it. That first Godzilla movie, as much as people complain, like,
it is a light show, like 100%, but
yeah, the big complaint I always heard from people is like, Godzilla's barely in it. But if you watch Japanese Godzilla movies, like, Godzilla's barely in those movies too. It's sort of like,
that's a weird complaint. I've never,
yeah, he's only like, if someone did the screen time and it's like 14 minutes, Godzilla's in the movie for like 14 minutes or something like that. Like, that you actually see him, you know?
That's probably a good thing.
And, you know, it's like, that's a Godzilla movie. That's the formula of Godzilla movie, is it's about people reacting to this force of nature that's happening. Like, that's what a Godzilla movie is. You know, it's like, do you want to see him, like, come home from the office? Oh man, I stomped an entire city today.
What a day.
What a day. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe see this if you're going to watch Kong versus Godzilla. I am going to watch that movie. Looking forward to it. But I haven't watched it yet. So,
right.
Maybe this week sometime.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it because it's coming off HBO eventually.
Right? In a week or two. Yeah. We don't have, we're running out of time.
Oh no.
But yeah.
Can I also say, interesting lore question. So.
Okay.
Kong is one of the Titans, right? So he's like Godzilla and Mothra and like, so I was under the impression that this is all like one super vast, like, species of like giants or something, right? That just all turn out super different.
Okay.
But this movie is like, yeah, there's a species of like giant apes. Like, King Kong is one of many.
Right. He's the last of them.
Right. So it's like, were there many Godzillas too? Are there many? Or is he just his own thing? If you're gonna introduce questions like that, and you're going to make a franchise out of a monster movie, I mean, I feel like, as a common courtesy, right, you should at least answer questions like
and
that.
In the lore of Godzilla, he was created by the atomic bomb.
Right.
Or the atomic energy bombs, whether it was, you know, the Hiroshima bomb or, like, the nuclear tests in the Pacific Islands.
Mm-hmm.
In the lore of Kong, Skull Island is the land that time forgot. That's why dinosaurs are still there. You know, like, it is a place where nature took the turn and made everything enormous.
Right.
That's it. I don't know that they're related. I don't know that they're the same species or the same family. They've come about from different circumstances.
Right.
One's a mutant and one is just, that's the path nature took them on.
Maybe they're both mutants, though. Because, I mean,
could be.
I'm trying to think, like, the second Godzilla movie, there's something with, like, a rift of, like, radiation energy. I don't know.
I feel like the second Godzilla movie tried too hard to explain everything. So maybe less explanation is what we need.
Maybe. I don't know. But I was just curious as to how they're linked.
I think they're linked in that they're all giant, and some producers in Hollywood wanted to make a giant fighting movie.
Maybe.
That's as far as I've thought it out.
It's probably right.
So.
Probably onto something.
Maybe it's explained in the new movie.
We'll have to find out.
We will.
Well, actually what they have in common is their mom's name is Martha.
Martha?
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be fighting. Kong's like, why did you say that name?
Save Mothra. Why did you say that?
Oh, that would be perfect.
If that is the direction the movie goes in, it is going to be the greatest movie of all time.
Or if it's like the human characters are just being fought over by the two.
Release the Gamora cut. Okay, enough kaiju Zack Snyder jokes. Let's close this out. Let's move on to shoutouts. What do you got this week, Oz?
All right, for this week, I wanted to introduce people to Paper Girls.
As you should.
That's right. This is a comic book by Brian K. Vaughn. Vaughn.
Yeah.
I'm stumped on how to even describe it. It's this sci-fi time travel mystery thing. Super vague, because I mean the story's super vague about it. I'm two volumes in, and like it's still expanding. Like this world is so cool. There's a lot of cool characters. It's like this 80s setting, group of paper girls run into someone's hunting them or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, but the art is just beautiful. It's well worth the story.
The art is by Cliff Chang, by the way.
Cliff Chang, okay.
And there is a video. I'll throw this in the show notes as well. There's a video of him drawing the Paper Girls. It was some promotional video. I don't remember what it was for. Mm-hmm. It's great to just watch him kind of scribble it out.
Ooh, that sounds awesome.
And come up with the Paper Girls on their bikes. But yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But that's cool to see. I like process videos.
Yeah, me too.
So it's still going, I believe. He's got like 7 or 8 issues, and then there's deluxe. I was looking it up cause I have the first two,
mm-hmm.
right? And I have like volume one of like a bunch of comic series. So I've been going through
right.
and. Adding to my collection. So I got 3 and 4 of Paper Girls. And he's still going, and he's got like extended volumes, which I don't know if that's a rewrite or just more art.
Sometimes they repackage them. Sometimes they'll take like you have volumes 1, 2, 3. Sometimes they package like those into one big volume. So it's,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
That could be it.
And when he finishes it up, if they put it in a giant omnibus edition, I won't be surprised. And that's probably when I'll buy it. I'll buy the giant, 600 pages or whatever.
Seriously, such a good story though. And the art, they play with like all sorts of things. Like there's giant insects and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's weird dimension hopping, time travel kind of stuff. Weird sci-fi.
It's kind of like Ant-Man in the way it plays with sci-fi.
Okay.
With the big, small, and quantum realm.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah.
I was going to say it's kind of like Stranger Things.
With that 80s nostalgia.
80s nostalgia and different dimensions and a big mystery about mm-hmm. something supernatural happening.
There's also an agency of some sort.
Weird.
Evil shenanigans.
Yeah, what I've read of it, I'll say it, better than Stranger Things.
I agree.
It's
which is why people
pandering.
Should check it out.
I agree.
What do you have?
I shouted out a guy named Clint Wells a little while ago. He released an album of covers last year called Quarantine Covers. He also, maybe a month ago, released an album of original songs of his that he had written, recorded, produced. He plays most of the instruments on the album. The album is called Vampire, and it is kind of pop singer-songwriter kind of stuff. A little more guitar-centric than like pop music. Just really solid songs. And Clint Wells is a session guitar player and sort of a guitar player for hire. And he also sings on here. He actually has a really good voice too. So it's like, why have you been sitting in the background playing guitar? You could have been singing this whole time too. Just really a good singer-songwriter album. And he's an indie guy. He released it himself. Which means when you support it, you're supporting him very directly. And he's a guy I think should be putting more music out.
That's cool to see someone move like center stage.
Yeah, kind of. You know, he still plays for other people and writes songs with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think he just wanted to do his own album. And this is his first solo album of original songs in his career, and it's one of those things. I bought it because I wanted to support him. I really enjoy the album. I don't know if you can buy a physical copy of it, but you can listen, you can stream it, you can buy it on Bandcamp, you can buy it through iTunes, Amazon, and I just, yeah, right. I really want to shout that out because it's an album I enjoy a lot, and I want people to support it.
Yeah, if you can't buy streaming, I mean, it's free. It supports. It's not the best.
It's not the best, but yeah.
It is giving something, and I think probably recommending to other people, right?
Absolutely. Think if you enjoy it, yeah, pass it on. If you enjoy any independent creative of any stripe, if you enjoy what they do, tell them and tell somebody else. Like, that helps so much.
Word of mouth.
Absolutely. On that note, I want to say thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility and it helps us grow this show.
That's right. And another way to help us grow is to tell a friend. Maybe you could befriend a giant ape.
A giant ape? Like Coco?
Or like Kong.
Oh.
Yeah, a little more.
So Coco did used to watch movies.
It's true.
You know.
So yeah, share us with people.
Please. Austin, you have the wheel next week.
That's right.
Tell the good people what to watch along with us. And tell me so I know what to watch.
Well, we are going to be watching one of my favorites. This is Gravity, directed by Sir Isaac Newton. So, really? Yeah.
Starring an apple.
actually, that story's a myth, and that's not how he discovered
Gravity. That's right. It got shot off his head with an arrow. Never mind.
But yeah, Gravity. Great. Really excited.
The John Mayer music video. No.
Is that something?
Never mind.
Gone over my head.
Sandra Bullock, right? Space, yeah. George Clooney.
She's. Those are the only two people in the movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, literally. It's those two.
Well, there's and voices.
I think there's a voice. Such a good movie. Honestly, though, it's one of those ones where I'm not sure if it's going to be if we'll have a lot to talk about other than, whoa, wasn't that good? But,
I think there's,
we'll find things to talk about.
I think we can find stuff in there.
There's a message. There's groundbreaking at the time CGI. I know a lot of behind the scenes stuff, so.
Cool.
I think I might be ranting about that. All that and more.
All right, as long as you don't sit there and pick the science apart. We don't care how space really works.
That's not how microgravity works.
Nobody cares!
Sandra Bullock, your hair wouldn't look like that. You just got out of a spacesuit.
Actually, Thanos couldn't actually balance a knife on his hand because his hand is a flat plane. I'm sorry.
Did you know, though, that you can't... Shut up. Did you know you cannot snap wearing a metal gauntlet? It's impossible. So... That is the only reason that we're safe from Thanos in the real universe.
Wow. That just ruined the entire movie for me.
Only in a movie can you snap with the glove on.
Oh, my God. Go watch a Eugene Levy movie. Austin, tell us your social media.
I am Austin N. Rude and Austin.N.Rude and Old Who Review.
I am philrude.com. I'm also at philrude on Twitter and at philrude75 on Instagram. Austin, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We did everything ourselves.
All right, let's get out of here. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See you guys.
The following is paid for by the Coalition for a Better Hollywood. For decades, Big Movie has had Hollywood studios in their back pocket. They spend millions to get you to spend billions on movies that are nothing more than sequels, reboots, remakes, reimaginings, Oscar cliche and January releases. Big Movie lobbyists have all but ensured original film ideas are ignored, forgotten, or maybe not even real. Are they feature films? Are they quality flicks? Are they real motion pictures? Your soon-to-be, if not already favorite movie podcast stands with the little movies. Help put an end to Big Movie's cinematic censorship and listen to the pop-up film cast every Tuesday wherever honest hard-working podcasts can be found. We are the Pop-Up Film Cast, a proud member of the Podfix Network, and we support this message.